Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Friday, the 28th of February, 2020. On the podcast today, Peter Wall, Chief Executive Officer of Argo Blockchain Mining, ARB is ticker there, and Peter discusses the business and current operational progress. Also on the podcast, Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell, and we talk about the market sell-off and how to position yourself. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. And if you did receive an RNS today, of course, and via the app, which is free to download, and you like the content of that, then press that thumbs up button, hit that there, and it could be featured in this list and on the front page of voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to get live push notification alerts whenever a company you follow releases an RNS? Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Peter Wall, Chief Executive Officer of Argo Blockchain. It's ARB ticker. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Yes, thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
Now, I'm familiar with the company. I know all about it. For people not familiar, Peter's never heard of the company before. Could you summarize what Argo Blockchain Mining is about? There's a hint in the title, of course.
Sure. Essentially, we mine digital gold. So we have, you know, digital gold being Bitcoin. We are one of the world's largest, on our way to becoming the world's largest publicly traded cryptocurrency miners. So we mine a series of different coins, primarily Bitcoin, and we have facilities in North America that mine those coins for us.
Yeah, well, do you know what? That's controversial already because you said digital Bitcoin. I've seen people argue on Twitter about that all the time because recently the Bitcoin price has come back for some reason when gold has risen. So it's almost that correlation sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. So it's a very odd situation. Is that your thought? Well, do you think it is digital gold?
I mean it more as an analogy. You know, yeah. I think that the gold is a store of value. I think Bitcoin is a store of value. I think, you know, I think that's the analogy, is that we're essentially doing work to get something of value, and gold miners do work to get something of value. So I think obviously, you know, the analogy breaks down in various places and the prices do not necessarily move in the same direction at the same time. But I think the idea, I mean, a lot of people don't understand what Bitcoin is, right? Mm-hmm. They don't understand the idea of a digital currency. Yeah. So I think we like to certainly think of it from a mine perspective as, you know, doing work to achieve something of value.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's talk about this because you are sort of releasing almost monthly updates. The last one was in January 2020, operational update, and things seem to be going in the right direction. You're mining more coins, and I know you're doing a February update, and I assume that's going to be better because the Bitcoin price has rallied. It's looking good on the chart. I mean, I've talked about this with other podcast guests about the Golden Cross and the moving averages happening here. It's come off a little in the last few days. But your goal is to achieve 17,000 machines by end of Q1, and you were ahead of schedule. How's that looking at the moment?
It's looking great. It's looking very good. We currently have, I think in our last announcement, we said 630 petahash, which is essentially the amount of hash power that we have mining Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. We have 630 petahash. That's, you know, rising as we add more machines, and we'll, like you said, we'll have an update soon. So the, you know, February is looking better than January, and I think that we're moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. We are extremely fortunate to have been able to deploy the capital that we deployed last year when we did, at the start of a new cycle of machines. You know, there's some incredible new machines that have come out that are really powerful, that are very efficient, and 99.5% of our Bitcoin mining machines are those machines. So we've got this incredible arsenal right now of Bitcoin miners, and we also mine a little bit of Equihash as well, which is a different algorithm. But we're in a great place. We're perfectly poised for 2020 to kind of continue to do what we do well, which is to mine Bitcoin and other crypto.
Yeah. And like I said, you are a Bitcoin miner, and you know, there's a lot of similarities between, you know, to traditional miners. I mean, when you are a low-cost miner, like I said, for example, if you're a low-cost gold miner, then you've got a bigger margin and you can keep on producing when other producers, you know, it's not no longer viable economically. So your margins are quite high. Tell us about that, if you could, and why are you such a low-cost miner?
So it's a great question. And, you know, essentially there's four pieces when you look at Bitcoin mining or cryptocurrency mining. There's four factors that come into play. The first factor is how much you got your rigs for. Like, what did you know, how much did it cost for you to get in the game? The second is the price of Bitcoin. Obviously, the more Bitcoin's worth, the better your margin is going to be. The third is a piece that a lot of people don't understand, and that's the mining difficulty. That is how difficult it is to mine, how much hash power is on the network, and how much difficulty does it take to solve a block to get a Bitcoin. And we can talk more about difficulty, because obviously there's some events this year that are going to affect difficulty. Mm-hmm. And then the last one is your price of power and your hosting costs. So what was your price of power and your hosting costs? So for us, we have as much as possible tried to deploy the capital that we have at the right time, which is at the start of a new market or start of a new cycle of machines. Like I said, we have a lot of very new efficient machines right now, and we want to continue to, you know, be at the front end of cycles of machines. The second is Bitcoin's been on a pretty good little run. Certainly it's up, you know, in the last 12 months and in the last 6 months. The difficulty has either stayed even with Bitcoin, with the price of Bitcoin, or kind of underpaced it so far in the last little while, which has been good. And then the fourth piece is, yeah, we mine in a place where there's, you know, cheap access to power, which is obviously an important factor for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, yeah, let's talk about that event, the halving, which people, I suppose, some people don't understand. So every so often, of course, Bitcoin, this is the third time it's happened, isn't it? So basically, the amount of rewards you'll receive for mining halves. So at the moment, it's 12.5, it'll go to 6.25.
Exactly.
Now, yeah, so essentially, economically, you think that would get worse for you, but people are expecting the price of Bitcoin to rise, which it has done just before and afterwards, the last two halvings. What's your thoughts on the halving, Peter?
Yeah, obviously the halving is a major event for all Bitcoin miners, not just for us. And you're correct, the Bitcoin rewards, so the amount of Bitcoin you get for solving a block, will go down from 12.5 to 6.25. And that is, you know, effectively you're going to get half the amount of Bitcoin. And traditionally, or historically, in previous halvings, the price of Bitcoin has risen prior to and after a halving. It's been one of the catalysts for a bull run. The other piece, and I mentioned it before, is the difficulty. So the mining difficulty. So what we're expecting is, not only are we expecting a bump in the price of Bitcoin, but we're expecting a decline in the mining difficulty, which, you know, over the course of a year doesn't generally happen. Generally, difficulty is going up. Moore's law, more machines are coming on, machines are getting more effective, it's getting harder to mine. Mm-hmm. But with the halving, there's going to be a number of legacy machines that are no longer effective. That, like, you know, if you think about the kind of workhorse of the last bull run in 2017 and you know, early 2018, it was the S9, the Bitmain S9 miner. And those miners are, you know, making cents a day right now, and that's going to go underwater, obviously depending on your price of power. But for most people who are mining, you know, 3, 4, 5 cents, that those machines are going to go underwater. And no one knows for sure how much of the current hash power those machines are using, but the expectation is that it's somewhere between, let's say, 15 and 40%. So if we take a more conservative, you know, let's say 20%, that would mean that unless people want to lose money mining, which most miners don't, That would mean about 20% of the hash rate is likely to come off the network at the halving. Mm-hmm. It might be more, it might be less. But so the important thing for miners is that the ratio between price of Bitcoin and their increase in increase, or in this case, decrease in difficulty remains, you know, somewhat in the same margin. So in this case, there's going to be a 50% drop in the price of Bitcoin. In the Bitcoin reward, but there's going to be at the same time a drop in, very likely a drop in the difficulty, meaning your margin will go from, you know, whatever it is, your margin is going to probably balance out lower. Like, it won't be as high a margin, but in the end, things will stabilize and mining will still be profitable post-halving.
So, essentially, it's a like for like, pretty much. You will still be generating, you know, positive cash flow there.
Yeah, that's correct. And we obviously, it's, you know, we've got various models that predict different scenarios, and you know, it's hard. Anyone who tells you they know what the price of Bitcoin is going to be in 6 months or 12 months, I mean, I don't want to use strong language, but it's. We believe it's going to go up. The question is, we don't know how much it's going to go up over what time period. There's no doubt, Justin, that Bitcoin is going to be around in the long run. It is a new asset. It is an important asset. It's a leader in a new kind of transactional currencies. And if you want to get on the Bitcoin train, you should do so now, because it's a lot better to do it now than in the future. I can't tell you when in the future, but 10 years from now, when we look back at this time now, we're going to be saying, wow, like we're still in the very early days of Bitcoin and of cryptocurrency adoption. And so this train is, you know, in its early days. And if you want to get on the train, it's a good time to get on it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, do you know what? I've studied, and read a lot about Bitcoin, and to me, it comes down to this. When it's the best performing sort of asset, even though people question whether it's an asset or not, I know a lot of bears don't believe it's an asset, but when it's the best performing asset of a decade, you will have money managers wanting to get exposure to it. That's the be-all, end-all. And so that then fuels the rise. It becomes a good performing asset that feels more people want to get exposure to it. So therein, and because we're seeing that right now, the adoption of Bitcoin through hedge funds, money managers is growing massively,
correct,
isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And along with it, all of the other pieces that come with that type of adoption, right? Which is like a derivatives market, a futures market, et cetera, et cetera. So as those pieces develop and the thing matures, and a lot of those have just come online in the last, you know, 6 months, there's a whole infrastructure that's built around it. So yeah, there's no doubt that it has, you know, there's nowhere for it to go but up.
Yeah. But let's be honest, if you look at gold, for example, right? Gold, you know, is not used a lot in industry. You know, silver's better than gold, but for some reason, people decided went for gold, and they realised there's limited sort of supply there. It's hard to get out of the ground, and going back, if someone said to you, "What is it? You know, have some of this. It's going to be worth something." And so, what does it do? Not a lot. They wouldn't believe it. Then a year later, if you said, "Oh, the price of that stuff I told you about last year has doubled." Then, you know, after a while, people will start buying it, full stop. It doesn't matter, you know, what it's used for, or whether it can be used for payments or anything like that. It doesn't matter. If the value of it goes up and more people believe that, then, you know, it's self-fulfilling, isn't it?
Yes. No, 100% agree. And I do think that you know, along with the store of value piece, which you're talking about, there's also going to be lots of, and we see them, you know, every week, every month coming online. There's more and more applications for digital currencies. So there's no doubt that it's both practical and a good store of value.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, you know, when people look at it, it's been around for like 10 years now. It's not been hacked. I mean, obviously, people's accounts have been hacked, but that's like any account online. But it's not been hacked. It's 70% of all cryptocurrencies traded is Bitcoin. So it's like the dollar of, you know, cryptocurrencies. So there's so many things going for it. And yet, you know, I see people sort of knocking it. But like I said, at the end of the day, when it comes down to it, if it's appreciating in value, that's the attraction, full stop. And you know, it doesn't need any more, you know, defending, and that's it. So essentially, you mentioned that there's other sort of cryptos you can you know, you can mine. First and foremost, when you mine Bitcoin, you get rewarded there. Do you automatically just sell that, or do you hold on to the Bitcoin, some of it?
It's a combination of both. I mean, we're always trying to figure out what our asset management, the balance is between moving crypto into fiat immediately versus, holding some. So we're looking at it on a daily and weekly basis. So essentially it's a combo. There are miners out there who are trading, every hour into fiat. We feel like it's a better asset management strategy to look at what are the major trends happening, and to try to manage our funds around that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I chat with a guy who's a trader, and he's traded Bitcoin quite a bit. And I've been saying for a while, I said, listen, look at it. It'll come back a bit after a nice rally. But I mean, I'd be surprised if it goes below, so 200-day moving average or 9,000 at the moment, and maybe come a bit below that. But the trend is up. If you look at the probability, last twice, the 50-day moving right. average has crossed the 200-day moving average. There's been massive moves, and that's the last twice it's happened. It's only happened twice, and it's moved up massively. And I said, of course, it'll have a little pullback here and there because it's quite volatile, but at the moment, just looking at probability, it looks quite good. But and so looking forward, into the future, 17,000 machines is the target. Are you going to sort of slowly, because you've had quite an aggressive ramp up here, are you going to sort of slowly increase that or just stick with 17,000, or what's happening?
So we're looking at both. I mean, obviously, we're looking at the market conditions every day and every month, and we'll make our decisions based on the market conditions. I mean, essentially, at our core, we're generating capital, and then we're reinvesting that capital into either new machines or returning value to shareholders. So the pieces that we're kind of constantly looking at is how fast do we grow, and in which ways do we grow, and how aggressive do we grow? So, I think it's trying to find a balance between, being aggressive and being smart. And so we kind of have this idea of smart growth and deploying capital in as effective a way as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but so at the moment, you think what's your ambition here? Next, I mean, what's
ambition is to be, as I said at the start, to be the largest publicly traded cryptocurrency miner in the world. And, we're not far off that right now. But we also realize that there's times to expand and there's times to not expand. So again, it's about getting there in a really smart way.
Yeah. Okay, excellent stuff. Peter, good to chat to you. On Vox Markets, every day in the podcast, I highlight the sort of top five most followed companies. So to get on that list, please give us three reasons why someone listening right now should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Sure. Well, I mean, if you're interested in Bitcoin, if you think Bitcoin is going to go on a run, and you're a believer in digital currencies, we're a proxy to those digital currencies. So that's number one. I think number two, we have an incredibly efficient and optimized mining infrastructure that is, industry leading, that is really well poised to kind of generate capital in 2020. And three, we have a smart growth strategy going forward. We're going to grow in a smart way that, keeps any downside risk at bay while at the same time taking advantage of upsides.
Marvelous stuff. Peter, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
Yeah, very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And I think it's because I was more prepared for this sell-off, but I genuinely find these kind of times in the markets very exciting, and I do see it as an investor myself. I find it as a bargain time to look for bargains, companies that are too overvalued, I'm looking for,
I think, the smart investor is already looking to move the debate on. It's the classic Buffett quote: when others are greedy, you'll be fearful. When others are fearful, it's time to get greedy. And, we've discussed some of these issues several times in the most recent podcast, like market exuberance, valuation, the importance of diversification, and some of these issues are now all coming home. And so I think you are doing it right in that you're thinking, okay, people are starting to run around like wet hens. Are there some opportunities here? obviously we don't know what the virus means, but to put it in context, just a couple of things to put it in context. One, the US stock market, as I look at it right now, is back to where it was in October. That's it. Yeah. So you've just blown the froth off the top of the cappuccino.
Yeah, yeah.
The second thing is, frightening as the virus is, and anybody who's got a relative who's been associated with it will, you know, be understandably petrified, the average flu influenza season worldwide kills 1,000 people a day. So what we've got right now is not nice, it's not funny, it's unquantifiable, but it's nothing beyond what we'd see with normal influenza. So in that respect, again, some context is required. And I think the issue that we've got is that, you know, if you look at I think what we're seeing at the moment, it tells you more about how exuberant stock markets have become rather than how bad the viral outbreak is.
Yes, do you know what? I think this is a catalyst for, like I said, for a long time we've been saying, you know, I've seen week after week, month after month, you know, the US stock market's hitting at all-time highs, and we keep going, this can't keep going on. It's just not, every year pretty much, or I think, what was it, is it between 8 and 12 months is a 10% correction. There hasn't been one, I don't think, since 2018. We had a bull market for over 10 years. So these are beyond averages, you know. It was due to happen. And I mean, I've had sort of cash in my portfolio, but 40% of my portfolio has been cash for I'd say 6 months pretty much. And I've gone up and down a little bit. I thought, is it ever going to happen? And then this coronavirus came around, and I thought, okay, what's going on? And the markets didn't react. I thought, what's going on here? There's something wrong with this market. And then it seems now it's a straw that broke the camel's back. And like I say, it's not just this. The markets were very high in America, and even though the UK markets haven't been that high, you know, America's the biggest economy in the world. When, like I said, when they sneeze, we catch a cold. Yeah, you know, that's what happens.
And I think if you look at a bull market, there are three phases to it generally, and they all sort of merge and intermingle a bit. But the first phase is, ooh, look, things have stopped getting worse. Isn't that quite nice?
Yeah.
The second phase is, we can definitely see things getting better. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Estimates are going up. Marvellous. Yeah. Third phase is, oh, look, isn't this fab? It's all going to be better forever.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we've been for some time, and it's become particularly pronounced in the last 12 to 18 months, and in fact, in the last 6 months. And if you look at the last 6 months, and some of the best performing stocks, Tesla, Beyond Meat, Virgin Galactic, we talked about Bitcoin a couple of weeks ago, which some people would view as a very speculative counter, and it's some of the most speculative stuff that had done the best. I'm not saying that's right, I'm not saying that's wrong, but it's generally the sort of thing you tend to see when people are actively embracing risk, they're greedy, and they're not thinking about fear, and they're not thinking about the dangers that can be. And that's why it doesn't take much to change perception. Now, the virus could be, for all we know, turn out to be much more serious than an average influenza outbreak. It really could be. It might not be. We don't know. And it's the don't know thing, because people have gone from convincing themselves that everything's absolutely hunky-dory to having to answer questions. And that's why markets have sold off, because that complacency and feeling that everything's going to be okay, and even if it isn't, central banks can dig us out anyway, so who cares? That is now being challenged. And that's why, so you're seeing that, you're now seeing two things. If you just think of valuation in the crude terms of a price-to-earnings ratio, a PE, mm-hmm. we've seen the E starting to go down, because more and more companies from more and more sectors from more and more countries are talking about disruption to supply chains, to end-user demand, or whatever. So the E is going down, and that therefore will naturally to some degree impact the market. Mm-hmm. But also, the more perception of risk goes up, the lower the P investors are prepared to pay to access the earnings. That's done as the equity risk premium going up effectively.
Yeah.
And as people get cocky and greedy, the P goes up. And as people get frightened and worried, the P goes down. And that's when you start to get your bargains, because the multiple that people are paying start to go down. So the UK now, if you believe the earnings forecast, and I accept that that is a big caveat, the wider and the spread of the virus, the longer it is, the more earnings will come under pressure, is now on a forward PE of 11 with a yield of 5 for 2020, which to me is not expensive. And even if you lop a big chunk off the earnings and a big chunk off the divvies, you're still getting it's some interesting individual stock-by-stock valuations at the very least.
Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? This week, I've got three funds. One's an emerging market fund. One's a sort of Vanguard all around the world for a life strategy. And the other one's a sort of dividend, UK dividend. And I've been topping up this week because this kind of sell-off, the speed of the sell-off is phenomenal. Look at the chart there. What's called a relative strength index is the volatility, pretty much all the strength of the... Now, that's just on a weekly chart on the UK FTSE 100. It's hit 30. The last twice it's done that was the financial crisis and before the dot-com boom. So I think this is the velocity of the sell-off is phenomenal. Yeah. So I'm expecting a bounce. I don't think it'll be sustained because if the economies do take a downturn, it'll bounce. But now, if you want to exit positions, I'm saying to people, is wait for the bounce because it will happen. People will be convincing you then. Sentiment will change very quickly. Everything's hunky-dory again. Everything's back on track. But I do think I think we are probably heading to a slower growth, economy anyway. So maybe the market.
To be perfectly honest anyway. But I think, let's say the Fed cuts rates on the 18th of March, and the CMA Fed Watch is now putting more than a 90% chance on that rate cut, by the way. Mm-hmm. What do you think markets will do? I think initially they might go, oh, whoop de doo, central banks have got our back. But I think after that, who knows? I mean, the mantra will be definitely don't fight the Fed. Dear listeners, please remember, the Fed slashed interest rates between 2000 and 2002 and 2007. It did not stop the market going down by 40 to 50%.
Yeah.
So if things go badly wrong, Fed rate cuts won't. And also, how much more room to cut then did they have then compared to where they are now? Mm-hmm. A whole boatload more. So I'm not saying that the Fed won't be able to beat, and I think markets will try and take comfort from that. But if the virus proves a lot worse than the standard influenza season and the economy really does take a hit, I'm not sure in terms of fundamentals the Fed will necessarily be able to do enough anyway. But I personally think the economy was not looking brilliant before this fright, and obviously this certainly isn't helping.
Yeah. I mean, do you know what? I've bought a couple of stocks, and when I say, I haven't gone mad, it's companies I really, they're growing their profits, most of them are paying dividends, and I thought, do you know what? And I put a little toe in here, because it may bounce, but these are companies I believe are pretty much not going to be that affected from this problem, and they've consistently grown their profits for the last 3 to 5 years, pretty much, and they're paying dividends. So I just thought, do you know what? They're a bit high. Literally last week, they were too high. And I thought, no, I'm going to start scaling in. And it may take me, a year to scale into them properly, but I don't care.
Patience is the key. Trying to time the market, as we know, is a mug's game, because things could just start to whipsaw around, and you as you say, if you are worried and thinking of selling, I'm sure there will be a bounce, whether it's a dead cat or not, and you can possibly try and refine things. But ultimately, we talked about diversification recently, but what are the three mistakes that particularly beginners tend to make, but equally we all make when our emotions are flipping from greed to fear? The first one is we tend to overtrade and incur lots of extra costs, and God forbid possibly even tax, depending on what wrapper or what we are or what we're not using. And when you're buying, if you sell something and buy something, you've got two decisions to make, in terms of timing and what do I sell and what do I buy. So don't overtrade. The second one is, and this comes back to diversification, lots of particularly novice investors think, I've got a worldview, I'm going to be right, bang, these are the five or six ways I'm going to play it. And they tend to be too heavily weighted towards those things and don't leave any scope for the possibility of just bad luck, we possibly got now with the viral outbreak. So do be diversified. Don't just focus on one particular type of company or industry or geography. I'd probably have, and diversify across assets. You've just said yourself, you've built up some cash. Cash brings you optionality as well as a downside buffer, because if you think things are oversold, you can step in when the wet hens are flapping about and take bargains off them. The third thing is always factor in downside risk. Again, it's easy to get caught up when stocks have been going up for 10 or 11 years in a row, and the way that people are behaving right now, you think it was 2008 when all we've done in the US is go back to where we were 4 months ago. And it isn't 2008. It isn't even 2011, when it looked like the European banking system was about to melt down. It's frightening. It's very worrying for anybody who knows anybody who's involved, and it's not pleasant at all. But it's not as if the Western banking civil market system is about to melt down again.
Someone on Twitter was panicking. I said, listen, you know, and saying this could be, everything's going to be shut down. And I said, listen, this sell-off has been faster than the financial crisis 2008. And that was, like I said, the banking infrastructure was at question. The very thing the markets are built on was in question. Now, don't tell me it's as bad as that, because it's not. I think also a lot of it is, like I said, first of all, we were a bit overvalued in the American markets and all that stuff.
Exactly.
And this is a catalyst, pretty much. But also, we are now more connected, you know, social media, everything's real time, pretty much. Data's been spread around so fast that people start to panic, you know, and all of a sudden people just start selling. So the immediacy, it's the hardest thing in the world is to have a bit of patience and do nothing, you know, sometimes. And like I said, Warren Buffett, what he's done, when he says, you know, be greedy when others are fearful, and it's essentially the old adage, isn't it? Buy low, sell high, you know, and it's harder to do that than say it, because when people are panicking, it's uncomfortable. The majority of people, the sentiment is sell, sell, sell. You've got to say, be calm, and say, hang on a sec, there's a good value there, I'm going to buy this. And when everyone's sort of buying, the market's going higher, you've got to start selling, you know, and that's quite hard. Again, your sentiment is at odds with the majority of people. That's why, you know, the majority is the market. To beat that, you can't be the market, you know?
No, I think it's one of my other favourite Buffett quotes is, you know, the stock market is a mechanism for transferring wealth from the impatient to the patient. And I think that, you know, we'll see how things settle. I mean, look, stock markets have gone from saying we really don't care about this, it's going to be contained, it's going to be short-lived, it's a Chinese problem, to okay, actually this is an issue, more different companies in different sectors in different countries are being affected, earnings forecasts are going down, we have to take this on board, but we still think, you know, it's going to be okay in central banks and governments and da-da-da. But they're clearly having to recalibrate. What are they not pricing in yet? A major economic slowdown or a recession, because we don't know how long this viral outbreak will last or what its impact will be. And so you can probably understand that. They're not pricing in inflation either, just to pluck something else out of the skies. Who's to say all that supply chain disruption, increased freight costs, shipping costs, trucking costs, don't start to filter through. Companies have to jack up prices to try and protect margins. We don't know, but those more extreme scenarios are not yet priced in by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, again, containment, eradication, once there's a vaccine, which, unless we've stumbled into the pages of a John Wyndham novel, I'm sure there will be, eventually this will be beaten, because betting against human ingenuity is not generally a very smart thing to do.
No, exactly.
But it could be uncomfortable. But what we've not, so we've gone from not caring to caring, but we haven't yet gone from, actually, this is fundamentally very serious for one or two or three different reasons, recession or inflation. And so if, and I stress, if the outbreak proves to be a lot worse than a standard flu season, and it has a knock-on effect on an already brittle economic outlook, then that is when power prices could come under further pressure. But we don't know that yet. And at the same time, some valuations are already getting, frankly, pretty attractive. And when things look their blackest, the darkest hours generally before the dawn, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's only one thing people love a bargain. If they're going to miss out, that's what drives the market back up. It's fear and greed. Like I said, you know, it's at the top, you're just going to go, and all of a sudden, people think the market's going to turn. Once that market started to turn again, the sentiment just flips, doesn't it? Straight away, people just dive back in as fast as they jump out.
I think that's interesting. Yeah. I mean, because market bottoms are an event. You look at any market bottom on a chart, and I defer to you on charts every time.
Yeah.
It's generally a one-off thing, right? Bang, bang, and they're gone. And everybody sits around for 3 to 6 months thinking, oh, it's going to go down again because... Yeah. And then in a year afterwards, when it's not gone down, oh, look, it's going up, we're going to get involved now.
Yeah.
But if you look at market tops, they're a process.
Yeah.
You will often get a double top, a triple top, and again, I defer to you, and I haven't looked at the US charts recently, but you will tend to see, because nobody wants the bull market to end, you will see several attempts to keep that bull market going. Yeah. And it's gradually knocked back by something going wrong or this going wrong. And eventually, that's when people start to lose heart. Now, let's see. I think a viral outbreak alone won't be enough to do it unless it's incredibly widespread and incredibly long-lasting. But I do think that the economic outlook wasn't brilliant anyway, just because there's so much debt in the system. And we were on at the fag end of a very long run anyway. But I'd be intrigued for your view on, the US chart, because market tops are a long run.
Yeah.
Process bottoms are an event.
Well, I'm looking at this is the S&P, and the last big sell-off was like, you know, just 2018. End of, I don't even remember that now.
It went down 5% on Christmas Eve that year.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think anybody even remembers now.
I'm seeing that. It's almost because you're right. The default for stock market over the long term is to go up. So everyone wants their businesses to get better. Everyone wants to get paid more. Everyone wants to increase their profits. Sure. So that's the direction of travel. Everyone wants to earn money from investing in the stock market. So everything is like pushing a ball underwater. It wants to bob back up, but you can hold it down for a while, but it'll shoot back up, you know? So, yeah, of course. And like you say, it's surprising how short a period, if you're going to bear market even, you know, it doesn't stay down there for long.
Very long. No. 18 months, 2 years tops. Whereas, and this is the thing, you know, contrarians, as you've clearly been, you know, once that process starts, real contrarians always start thinking, well, yeah, there's going to be a recession, but the world isn't going to come to an end. Yeah. Lots of companies will come out the other side unscathed. Which ones are going to be, and which ones will be in a stronger position because some of their weak or badly run rivals have gone bust and gone to the wall. Yeah. So there will be opportunity.
This is what I always think to when I say to a friend of mine, I say, listen, when I talk about recession, people think I'm being bearish. I'm saying, no, you know, it's going to happen sooner or later. Yeah, yeah. And the fact
it's
is,
necessary,
if you are positioned correctly, you can earn better money out of the back of a recession than ever in the stock market investing, because the prices just go nuts when you come out. When everyone realizes, hang on, that's the back of end of it. It just goes nuts. Yeah. So,
not everybody will agree with it, but what, you know, again, we don't want to turn this into the Warren Buffett fan club show, but you know, I can't remember the exact words, but Buffett said, pessimism is not the enemy of the investor. Nobody welcomes pessimism. Nobody welcomes recessions. But for the well-prepared investor, they're actually your friend, because pessimism leads to low prices, and low prices means bargains. Yeah. He said it's optimism that gets investors in trouble, not pessimism, which is an interesting perspective. Because it's optimism that leads people to do things like valuing Virgin Galactic at $7 billion when it's got $1 million of quarterly sales.
Yeah.
Not that I'm knocking Branson or the project or its enormous potential. Just take a step back and think about what you're actually paying for, ladies and gentlemen, when you look at stocks like that.
I know, yeah. I mean, you can go right on those kind of things, but you know what? If you stick to valuations and be very careful, like, you know, like Buffett is, you very rarely go wrong. And that's the thing. It's about making money and not losing money. It's two sides of the equation.
The hard bit about having a valuation discipline is you will miss out on runs, and the fear of missing out and the pressure that brings is enormous. But it will spare you a lot of... I mean, there may be a lot of investors who just haven't slept well this week, and I can understand that, even if we are only back to where we were in October in the US stock market. But those people who've stuck to valuation disciplines and not got carried away or gone beyond their normal risk parameters will have still slept fine. And I think if you are an investor, what I would suggest, again, always be wary of overtrading, but if you have put things in your portfolio in the last year that you wouldn't have done normally, that are beyond your normal tolerance for risk, or you've just had a bit of a punt because somebody told you, or you've done something that's just not normally for you, I think they're the things that you should be reviewing right now, because if things do get sticky for a long time, they're the things that will keep you awake and possibly inflict the most financial pain, because you've just done things you wouldn't have done. You say you've stuck a stock and you don't really understand it because you just thought it was going up. They're the names that generally get you in trouble.
Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff. Yeah, exactly. Russ, thanks for that, fella. And
pleasure.
Any plans for the weekend? Are you self-isolating or what's happening?
No. to this weekend, we've got actually not self-isolating. We've got 20 family members coming round for it's family birthday party season. So we've sort of folded them all in, quite a few into one tomorrow. So we've got 20 rallies. So I'm making smoked salmon sandwiches and all sorts of different things tomorrow morning. Mm-hmm. And then Friday, Sunday afternoon will be the lads' cricket nets again. That's about it, I think.
Do you know what? My two sons, literally, rugby training has been cancelled for the last... this is the third week now. They've just found some astroturf because it's flooded. It's flooded. I mean, the pitch is flooded. And it's like, it's a third storm in a row. And it's in line with the markets almost. It's like, it's awful. But
this is indoor times sports change. Hall, indoor sports hall, thankfully.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's
but
good.
So that's not so. That's not too. But yeah, the bit hard bit there is getting all the padding and the matting out for the net so we don't dig up the sports hall with the cricket balls.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous, Russ. Speak next week.
Take care.
Well, okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours at 5. EasyJet, as I'm speaking now, has just gone from the red into the green, just by a tiny bit, up at 0.2% to 11.12. So, well, you know, £11.12. At 4, Emotion Group, that's up 3.4% to 5.95. At 3, down 13.65% to 1.07. At 2, Advanced Energy. New tick, of course, it was ADV is Endless Energy, it was. And number one most followed companies, Eddie Stobart Logistics. Still people, you know, betting on that, punting on it. A company with debt up to his eyeballs. Do you know what? It's not even up to his eyeballs of debt. It's four times its market cap. So it's four times bigger than it. So by all means, have a punt. But don't put any serious money in that whatsoever. Because it's not, you know, it's like I said, there's plenty of companies out there with no debt. Why choose a company with debt four times its actual valuation and their loss making? No point. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Shanda Gold, full year results for the year ended 31st December 2019. At four, Gulf Keystone Petroleum, transaction only shares. At three, Visarian, investor communications. At two, Europa Metals, hydrological study completed. And number one, most liked RNS is from United Oil and Gas, completion of the acquisition and readmission to AIM from them, of course, there. At the moment, 2.825 pence, down 1.74%. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Every business has an ambition. PayPal Open is the platform designed to help you grow into yours. With business loans so you can expand and access to hundreds of millions of PayPal customers worldwide. And your customers can pay all the ways they want. With PayPal, Venmo, Pay Later, and all major cards. So you can focus on scaling up. When it's time to get growing, there's one platform for all business. PayPal Open. Grow today at paypalopen.com. Loans subject to approval in available locations.